Known from years ago in San Francisco. He's a spoken word hero. He's a writer. He refused to let Holiday in Cambodia be purchased by the Levi's company. He's a saint in my church. Jello Biafra! Jello! Jello! Amen!
Hello, hello. Let me see if I can get this thing to... This is a weird little mic we have tonight, isn't it? Last time I was here, I was at a friend's place in the wee hours of the night in South Portland, watching in disbelief as the national election returns unfolded. Of course, the blackout on the Nader candidacy and the Green Party was near complete, to the point where he was threatened with arrest if he tried to attend the Boston televised debate between King George II and Prince Albert. Everybody else with a ticket got in, but Ralph Nader was threatened with arrest. But there it was. All of a sudden they decided, okay, let's just make King George the president. Okay, Florida's a little weird, but he's the president, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But even though that was the most stage-managed election I have seen in my entire lifetime in this country, you know, getting lurching closer and closer to pro wrestling, the way the corporate-managed... corporate-controlled media chooses to cover it. Anything so long as no issues are seriously debated. Nevertheless, the spirit of Seattle continues to spread. Now, in order to have their little G8 summit powwow in the Kananaskis country in Alberta near Calgary, they spent practically $1 billion Canadian dollars on security that they could have used for something else. And to make sure that protesters stayed away and no one would make fun of them, they had it clear back in some lodge that was surrounded not only by police officers, but bears as well. It's getting more... The more you look into NAFTA and the World Trade Organization and the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas that Bush is trying to get fast track in Congress to approve, saying by giving more and more of our services away to corporations, we're fighting terrorists. And by signing a treaty whereby some corporation can shake down a country like Ecuador for sanctions and damages because they won't privatize their water supply, or turn over their health care system or their schools to American companies, that somehow is fighting terrorism. But that's not capitalism anymore, that's feudalism. It is. And nowadays, in order to have their little meetings, they have to have a moat, too. They even put up big cement ones all around the old part of Quebec City about a year ago during the FTAA gathering there, the one where Bush's words of wisdom to the media were that there's not going to be any news conference today. Not in English, not in French, not in Mexican. What many people don't know about Quebec City meetings is there were 70,000 protesters there. That's 20,000 more. 20,000 more than Seattle showed up. So not only that, do they hide among bears, who at least maybe they can do business with because the mindset is the same. You know, they have to hide to do these meetings now because they're afraid of them, the peasants, us. So instead of Seattle, the World Trade Organization this time decides to have their gathering in Qatar, a tiny little Persian Gulf oil sheik dictatorship out on a little peninsula. There won't be protesters there. They tried to ram through a lot of the uglier stuff from the Multilateral Agreement on Investments Treaty and the stuff that's going to be in FTAA, sneak it into the bylaws of the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs, the GATT Treaty that gave us the WTO. Even then, it didn't work. Because according to the Wall Street Journal, of all places, found a Wall Street Journal on the floor of an airplane and thought, what are they trying to tell each other? Let's read this. They're covering the Qatar meetings. Inside the meetings, they couldn't get a lot of it in because the trade minister from India kept stalling, filibustering, protesting. And according to the Wall Street Journal, this was in response to 25,000 protesters hitting the streets in New Delhi to send him a message about what people think of globalization in this day and age. So this anti-corporate movement to take our lives and our society back from corporate power, which some people even in Europe call the spirit of Seattle, it isn't dead because of September 11th, it's merely changing a flat tire. But in other places like India and in Brazil, where last April 50,000 people hit the streets in Porto Alegre to protest globalization when they had a meeting there, it's very, very much alive. But insurrection in the streets is only one part. That's not going to get as much done unless there is insurrection in the voting booth at the same time. You can't have one without the other. That's what the Green Party's about. That's what ballot initiatives like medical marijuana and living wage laws and clean campaign laws are all about. And imagine actually having somebody to vote for. Jonathan Carter for governor. Jonathan Eder for Congress and the other candidates who came up here earlier and joined Mr. Carter. Because otherwise we just get one corporate managed candidate after another, which is just as toxic to our health as corporate managed medical care, basically. Another interesting thing I found out in Canada that doesn't seem to have made the USA Today or CNN down here is privatization has killed people up there. Just like when they privatized the trains in Britain and they started crashing into each other. Well, in the town of Walkerton, Ontario, the private company hired to inspect the water supply thought it would be a great idea in the fine spirit of privateering to simply take the money to inspect the water supply and then not do it very often. That's what privatization is all about. And lo and behold, there was an E. coli outbreak there about 2 years ago. 2,500 people went to the hospital, 7 people died. So when people make noises about how important it is that we privatize our schools, our water supply, our health care, our mass transit, this is where to show up and draw a line in the dirt and say no. And even if you lose the first time and the good candidates don't get in, the right ballot initiatives don't get passed, that doesn't mean you've lost forever and ever and ever. It means you've spread the base of the pyramid and drawn that many more voters out of the closet to show up and start voting again. And every single one of those people can draw more people out of the closet next time until we break through. And even if you don't wind up going all the way to Qatar to protest or fight off the bears and the police to tell George Bush what he needs to know up in Canada, there are many, many other ways we as individuals can fight back against corporate feudalism. After all, no matter what the more radical than thou may tell you, doing something is always better than doing nothing. And we don't have to wait till the next Seattle or the next election to start doing these things. All we have to do, and this is the easiest thing to turn other people on to doing as well, is just decide as an individual, okay, I'm not going to cooperate with corporate feudalism anymore. They can't have me. Starting with, as much as humanly possible, Don't give them your money! As little money as possible to chain stores and box stores and chain restaurants. Put the money back into the community where the money's going to stay in the community instead. And think of the payback. You give your money to the independent music store, there's going to be actual good music in the store, even local music. And nobody's going to say you're too young to buy an album because it has a Tipper Gore sticker on it. And, you know, you support the local bookstores, the clerks may even be interested in literature and know how to read. Support the independent grocers. You're more likely to have locally grown food, organic food. As opposed to genetically modified, or should I say genetically mutilated, frankenfood being put in the box of cornflakes, into your grocery bag, and into your mouth without anything on the box even telling you it's there. And hey, if you want to look as good as I do tonight, you gotta go to the independent clothing stores and the thrift stores, not to Walmart and the Gap, where all the clothes look alike anyway! And don't hate the media, become the media! Not just supporting, if not participating in, independent publications and Zine and the main independent media center, but going one-on-one with people you know at home, at school, at work, family, and if they start spouting Rush Limbaugh jive or welfare cheats are the reason I can't put food on the table jive, or we have to support President Bush in the war no matter how reckless and irresponsible it becomes, don't just tune them out and look at them as unreachable. If it's somebody you know, try to reach them one-on-one. Talk to them. Remember what's important to them and wiggle around from there. It's not the welfare cheats taking your money away. It's chains like Walmart taking your job away. So don't give them your own money and don't support them, etc., etc., etc. If Jonathan Carter of the Green Party is locked out of televised gubernatorial debates, go visit the TV stations and demand to be let in. And some of the biggest backlash against the progressive movements in this country right now are not coming from the hardcore Dick Cheney, John Ashcroft Republicans. They're coming from Democrats who are saying, if it weren't for Ralph Nader and the goddamn Greens, Alan Tipper Gore would be in the White House right now and everything would be so much better. Ho, ho, ho. Don't let him get away with that. Ralph Nader didn't cost Gore the election. Gore cost himself the election. And make a point of backing that up, that saying, yeah, I vote and I am not going to ever vote for anybody, no matter who the opponent is, who is pro-death penalty, pro-WTO, pro-drug war, pro-Star Wars. Gore even bragged about gutting the welfare system and getting Clinton to sign Newt Gingrich's welfare bill. He bragged that he, almost alone among Democrats, voted to support the Gulf War. That helped cost him the election. Handing Florida to Bush helped cost him the election. When he refused to go to bat for all the African Americans thrown off the voting rolls because they were black. I was in Tallahassee, Florida a couple months ago, and I find out there just one example, when there's 500 votes before Wild Billy Rehnquist and his barnyard friends arbitrarily crown King George the new president, Tallahassee alone, Florida State University, and then literally across the tracks was another university, Florida A&M, an almost all African American school of somewhere between 8,000 to 10,000 students. And all the Florida A&M students were told to go to the main student union building on campus to vote on election day in 2000. They get there and the door is locked with no notice as to where they can go to vote. Just one example. There's a new book out called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy by Greg Palast that details these things. You might want to check it out. And, you know, make a point of getting in people's faces, especially candidates who don't want you to think about voting for decent people, even though the Democrats up in Washington now say that their focus groups and pollsters don't see Enron as a sexy issue, therefore they're not going to pursue it. Enron is important. WorldCom, MCI, and whoever falls next and takes our money, yes, that is important. And isn't it about time more of us stood up as patriotic Americans, and when George W. says things like, you're either with us or with the terrorists? Don't let them get away with it. It's not unpatriotic to say, yo, I'm not with Bush or the terrorists. And start asking louder and louder and louder. Start asking louder and louder and louder, is what we're doing over there really the best way to solve this problem, or is it making it much, much worse? When Bush comes out and talks about sending 200,000 ground troops into Iraq in January just because he thinks it'll be a cool idea to kill Saddam Hussein, some of you are draft age here, and this could affect you in a very, very ugly way. Not to mention that could be about the worst foreign policy mistake made in our entire lifetimes as far as how many other fires it's going to start over there and how long it'll take to repair the damage. The way to become the media and get through to people that the War on Terrorism Incorporated is wrong is just to point out, okay, I'm not with bin Laden, I feel horrible about what happened on September 11th, but what we're doing now is terrible military strategy. Terrible military strategy. If our goal is to protect our country and other people from terrorist attacks, then why are we blowing more and more people up over there and creating more and more animosity and hatred, thus creating more Osama bin Ladens, more Al-Qaedas, and more suicide bombers, desperate as hell, who feel they have nothing to lose. And all that accomplishes, long term, is making our own country less and less and less safe for all of us. Even my girlfriend's stepmother, who's so rah-rah Republican, she has a wing of the house she lived in devoted to being a Republican museum with Reagan and Bush memorabilia and every American flag ever made. My girlfriend's told, illustrated to her why this is bad military strategy, almost guaranteed to backfire. Even this woman said, you know, that's a good point. That is the way to get through to people that the war on terrorism needs to be actively opposed before we make the big mistake and go into Iraq. We can still prevent it. There's no way we can win a war on terrorism. Israel's been trying since the day of their birth. Have they won? Has the British government won their war on terrorism in Northern Ireland? Not exactly. I find myself agreeing with Michael Medved, of all people, a conservative punditoid who wrote in the USA Today that the American people should be pursue prevention and protection, not punishment. Prevention, protection, not punishment. So a few suggestions there. Not only should we end our dependence on foreign oil, but as much as humanly possible, end our dependence on oil altogether. Why SUVs are a greater threat to national security than Osama bin Laden. They not only eat up a wildly disproportionate amount of the oil we chew up, which is already a quarter of the world's supply every year, but that makes us more dependent on foreign oil, more dependent on keeping the people whose oil is under their land repressed. And what good is it going to be to put a huge wall around ourselves to protect us from terrorism if we've put so many holes in the sky we can't go outside anymore? On top of that, instead of spending hundreds of billions of dollars on Reagan's fantasy Star Wars, which scares me far more than Osama or Saddam or Big Bad North Korea combined ever could, because if one of those devices blows or malfunctions and blows in the atmosphere, it could potentially spread around enough plutonium dust to wipe out damn near every breathing critter on Earth. Why not spend that money on safer airports and safer airplanes instead? And speaking of the need to become the media, hardly anybody outside of Florida knows that also in Florida during the 2000 election, voters in that state, of all state, passed a ballot initiative calling for the construction of a high-speed rail system throughout the state. A national high-speed train system like they have in France or Japan. Hop on the train, you're in New York City in an hour, Los Angeles in 3 and 4. That would be a lot better way to spend the Star Wars money than putting nukes in outer space, if you ask me. And to quote Michael Moore, will we ever get to the point that we realize we will be safer when the rest of the world isn't being repressed so we can have nice running shoes? Rest of the world isn't living in poverty so we can have nice running shoes. That was a quote. So don't believe the hype. We are patriotic citizens too, because we care about the long-term consequences of our actions instead of short-term ass-kicking to soothe our inner child. Patriotism is defined as love of country, the people in it, the environment, how it affects other people in their environment. Patriotism is not defined as giving blind loyalty and a blank check to George W. Bush. Or blind loyalty and a blank check to the Democrats asleep on the job as John Ashcroft rammed through the USA Patriot Act, allowing the FBI to break into any of our houses they want, anytime they want, and if we tell anybody else they've been there, we can go to jail. That was what was in that act. And so don't put up with them either. And look at all the different kinds of people we have here tonight. We are far from alone on all this. And we stopped the Vietnam War. We stopped the Gulf War. We need to stop this one too. And on top of it, long term, I say this especially to people who came here for me or who are younger. As you get older, don't forget where you came from. Don't forget what brought you here. So many people, when they it seems like when people become parents and or buy property, suddenly something in here changes and they forget who they are. That doesn't have to happen to you if you don't want it to happen to you. So, obviously, fighting corporate power every way we can is more urgent than ever before. Stopping the expansion of the war on terrorism into Iraq is more important than, well, I was going to say ever before, but you know what I mean. Anyway, as they say in show business, let's roll. Don't give up. Thanks.